Welcome back to another episode of Author Conversations, which may be our first two-parter and our first explicit. We got to put an E on it. I'm Johnny Foster, and my co-host Jenny is here.
Hello, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening.
Whatever the case may be. Jenny, before we get into the book, Inside the Texas Chicken Ranch, which The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas is based on, I have a story about that movie that was made. And it features my great-grandmother, who we called Nanny. So her and her sister were all excited to go see the movie version of The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas because Dolly Parton was in it. And Dolly could do no wrong in Nanny's eyes. And in a lot of people's eyes, she still can't do any wrong. I think Dolly today could slap a baby as she is telling some country yarn and people would love it. I think she like took Betty White's place when Betty White died. Anyway, Dolly is in this movie and Burt Reynolds, but Dolly is what has got Nanny and her sister's attention. Well, the movie starts and it's a bit too much for these old Southern Baptist girls. Dolly is in lingerie.
Oh my.
The ladies in the movie are all doing really bad things in my nanny's eye. And her sister sunk down into the seats because they were too afraid to leave because somebody might see them. After the movie, they slink out of the theater, and I don't think she ever liked Dolly again after that.
Oh, no.
But, I mean, what does she expect from a movie called The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas? Just because Dolly's in it doesn't mean they're going to clean it up.
Right.
Dolly Parton will tell some dirty jokes.
That she will.
Anyway, so let's get to the book and the author. Do you want to read the
sure.
book information?
Yeah. So the book is Inside the Texas Chicken Ranch, the definitive account of the best little whorehouse by Jamie Lynn Blash. Is a native Texas Texan. Jamie grew up less than 20 miles from the former chicken ranch and heard stories about it his entire life. He was the only person to conduct extensive interviews with its former madam, Edna Milton Chadwell, prior to her death in 2012. Later that year, he presented a paper to the East Texas Historical Association titled The Last Madam, The Unexpected Life of the Chicken Ranch's Edna Milton. Blaschke, and I apologize if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly, has published in fiction, nonfiction, and graphic arts for nearly two decades, with his writings appearing in Electric Velocipede? Velocipede?
You can do it. Electric.
Cross Plains Universe, Interzone, and Brutarian, and San Marcos Mercury, among others. He is a member of the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America Authors Guild and former member of the East Texas Historical Society. He earned his bachelor's degree in journalism at Texas A&M University, which we have some stories about, and studied fine art photography at Texas State University, where he is currently the director of media relations.
Formerly in the Historical Society, what the story is there. Too many stories about the best little whorehouse, maybe. Okay. So, Jamie starts off with a bit of history about this area of Texas and prostitution in Texas.
Right.
It's in-depth, interesting, and it's a pretty good read. The book also delves deeper into the life of the madams who ran the ranch and those around them. That's not why we're here, is it? We, as consumers, want the juicy details. If you want every detail, of course, you need to buy the book. It's well worth the read. The place that would become known as a chicken ranch has a couple of legends around its beginning, which we really won't get into too much. It would be open in a town called LaGrange, Texas. ZZ Top has a song called LaGrange. It's like an ode to this place. Now, the people in the town when the original incarnation opened were mostly German and Czech immigrants. They basically had a more socially liberal view of brothels, or as the madams of the establishment would call them, a boarding house. I mean, girls were paying for the room.
Right. Other people were also paying for rooms.
They were paying for their room, but they did things to make sure they had money to pay for the room. So before we get started, too, I want to say there is a lot of racial slurs in this book.
There really were. I was a little surprised about that, to be honest.
And it sucks because it starts to be like characters you like.
Yeah.
And then they'll say something. And you're like even the reporter, Marvin, had something bad he said, too.
Yeah.
So.
And like, part of me gets it. Part of me is also annoyed that they made it into the book.
Yeah, but it's part of history, though.
I know.
We can't overlook that part, even because we got to know good and bad to get the whole story.
This is true. It's true.
Even with, like, a story that has two different histories, the real history is probably somewhere in the middle.
That also true, because the history is always told by the winners.
Yeah. And then there's another side, you know, to it. That's why you can't just take things at face value. You got to do your own research into it.
Absolutely.
But we do know for a fact there was a whorehouse in Texas.
There were a few whorehouses in Texas, actually.
And if the term whorehouse offends you, you probably just want to turn this off right now, because that's probably going to be used a lot. I do have brothels and things like that interchanged in, but the best little whorehouse in Texas was based on this. And also, they call themselves whores a lot in here.
Yeah, they sure do.
So there's that. Even though one of the madams that we talk about worked closely with those of other races, she could be racist too.
Mm-hmm.
And so did some of the law enforcement. And like I said earlier, the reporter. So I want to throw that out there for anyone who reads the book. We won't repeat the slurs here on the podcast, but we want to let it be known that those are in there. And also, just know that when you read the book, if you're, I guess, more conservative, ultra conservative,
this book might not be for you.
This book might not be for you, but I mean, it's an interesting story. It's an interesting story from a different time and place. But here we go. We're going to get into the history. So the history of the brothel went back to the early to mid 1840s. The brothel didn't cause any trouble aside from what it offered within its walls. I left on this, like, they didn't cause any trouble. They're not doing anything wrong. Well, it is illegal, though, what you're doing. And no one gave it trouble. It was an unspoken agreement and a way to look the opposite way of what was going on. So for the sake of time in our story, we will skip ahead to 1913, when a madam by the name of Aunt Jessie took ownership of the brothel. When she first arrived, it was in a bad area of town in a very rundown building. The prostitutes themselves actually serviced, quotation marks, their customers in little cribs or small shacks. These shacks were in the middle of town, and the town wanted to get rid of that eyesore. So what did they do? Well, Aunt Jessie, in 1915, with her business partner, bought 11 acres and a farmhouse to open up a new location. She fixed up the house with an interesting deal with the owner of a lumber yard named Mr. Temple. Mr. Temple told her he would supply materials if she would pay the men. Jenny, I kind of feel like Mr. Temple might have been a nice guy, but it's hard for me to believe he did this just out of the kindness of his heart. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. I feel
there was
like
probably like a kickback there.
He might have been a customer.
Dipped a spin in the inkwell, so to say.
Maybe he also allowed his men to dip. You know, everybody gets a little piece.
He did say if she took care of some, you know.
Exactly.
The place became known by its new name when it opened up. Jessie Williams Fashionable Boarding House. Aunt Jessie knew that in order to keep everyone in the county happy, an example of the sheriff, she needed to be an asset to him and not a thorn in his side. This brings us to our first sheriff, Sheriff August Lowson, who had a brother named Will. Will would succeed his brother in that office. Will was what you might think of when you think of a grizzled sheriff from like an old Western movie. He was also kind of a detective, that's another, you know, in quotes, who could coerce testimony out of an alleged criminal, which seems fishy. Aunt Jessie makes a deal with Sheriff August Lowson, which carried over to his brother's tenure, that the brothel would serve as a means of conveying information about criminals who bragged on their crimes at her establishment. Aunt Jessie would make sure to keep her nose clean, except for the obvious, if you know what I mean. She even stopped selling alcohol during Prohibition and during both World Wars, when the nearby bases asked her to stop allowing GIs because the military was afraid of venereal diseases. However, she did let local boys who were in the service into the place. Venereal diseases was a big deal during the war. And I remember, I think both Uncle Hollis and my grandfather, who served in the Navy, they would wait, the ship's doctors, like, because they were both on aircraft carriers, would wait until the ship came back into port to see if they needed to do any cleaning out of that tract down there.
Oh, man.
And Pawpaw said you could hear men screaming from the bowels of the ship when that was happening. But they also waited to do it right before they went into port, so any family or sweethearts would say, why aren't they not off the ship yet? And then they would know, oh, because they got a venereal disease while they were overseas.
Oh, no.
I don't know if that went on all ships, but it did Uncle Hollis's and Pawpaw's ships. Yeah. Antietam and Intrepid.
I can only imagine it was most ships.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, ports of call and stuff of that nature, young sailors.
Mm-hmm.
So she also made herself well-liked in the community of LaGrange by having her girls send gifts and letters to the local boys who were serving in the wars. That went a long way in that small town. When peacetime came and you had soldiers or airmen training at bases nearby, and apparently there were a lot of bases for them to train at nearby, business boomed for Aunt Jessie when she lifted that ban on the GIs. The girls at the boarding house would also spend their money in town at the various shops. And everything that Aunt Jessie bought was bought locally. And the deputy sheriff, in fact, would go pick up the girls in the early 30s on a Saturday afternoon so they could shop in town. And, you know, even like with the GIs and extra people coming in to go frequent what would become the chicken ranch, that brought a lot of money into the town, too. They're eating at restaurants or staying at hotels.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of money coming to shopping at shops. So when a local hospital, I said so again. See, I said I'm going to write down don't say so, and I didn't. I'm going to do it right now. I noticed when I was editing the last two that I did that. I used to go, a lot, and I got over that. So, dadgummit. I'm just going to, like, get a pen knife, start stabbing myself when I do it. Then I just said again. Whatever. But a local hospital was expanding, and Aunt Jessie donated $10,000 for the expansion. I didn't look up how much that is in today's money this time. Even more conservatives in the community liked her. As we know, money can make you overlook all kinds of things. Or especially try to get people to overlook all kinds of things.
Yeah, especially when it's given in charity.
Yeah. And rich people get away with all kinds of things.
That's also true.
I don't know if you know this or not, but there's a certain guy who didn't hang himself. So... And we still don't have that list. But hey, Taylor Swift's at Chiefs game, so let's focus on that instead.
It's very important.
Yeah. What's Taylor wearing this week at the game? I just want to watch the game. I don't care. I'm not a big on Taylor Swift. I don't get the Taylor Swift thing.
I also don't, to be honest. Like, her music is catchy, but the cultish nature of her fans gets a little strange.
Did you look at the 40,000?
I did. 10,000 roughly in 1900 would amount to about 360,000 today.
Wow.
It's a big jump.
They made some money out at the whorehouse.
Yeah, yeah. They basically bought a house for the hospital.
Yeah. But as good as she seemed, one of the former girls knew the real side to Aunt Jessie. She was a shrewd businesswoman who would make her girls do things they didn't want to do with customers, or they could get out of the brothel. If you don't want to do it, leave. Aunt Jessie's time would eventually run out as she broke her hip on a trip. I like how that rhymes. She would eventually lose that leg and be confined to a wheelchair. Before we go further, we should probably talk about how Jessie Williams' fashionable boarding house became known as the Chicken Ranch. There are a couple stories. One is that the brothel accepted livestock in exchange for, you know, during the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, the old farm had chickens running everywhere and eggs galore. The girls didn't starve during the Great Depression thanks to Aunt Jessie's thinking. With so many chickens, the men started calling the place the Chicken Farm or Chicken Ranch, and would say they were going to the chicken farm or ranch as a euphemism. The other, told by the more famous madam of the Chicken Ranch, Miss Edna, seems more plausible. And I'm going to read that just for a second here. She said, "I'm going to tell you the truth about those chickens. I heard it so many damn times people asked about it. Every now and then there's an investigation that goes on with a grand jury. Well, some of the men around there was telling Jessie, you know there's going to be a grand jury investigation into everything that's been going on. You know somebody's always not going to bring up your place out there. We've been thinking about how you might get around it. If you got some chickens out there, a chicken ranch, they just might let it slide." So Aunt Jessie went out and bought 100 chicks, raising them and giving them the run of her 11 acres. Going to the chicken farm became a popular euphemism in LaGrange, but the customers didn't get by with offering pullets in trade. "There was no sales of chickens," Edna said. "You could go down to the hatchery and buy 50 or whatever you want and put out there. So that when the foreman on the grand jury wanted to investigate, all they got out there is a bunch of chickens. Got a little chicken ranch, that's all. That's how the name got started."
I love that. I love that she took that and ran with it.
Well, I mean, if you're a good promoter, you're going to do that.
Right.
So I mean, that's, to me, that story is better than trading for livestock.
Yeah, because
you kind of like beat the system,
right? Which I feel like Edna does a lot.
Yes, she does.
Or she joins the system, rather.
It's really weird, man. It's like they have their own dystopian laws out there. I'm not saying the town looked dystopian. I'm not sure what it looked like back then. I'm sure it was very nice. But it's one of those places where it's like, you don't want to be in a small town.
Unless apparently you work in a whorehouse. That was an interesting thing that I really liked reading. I liked reading about. was that the small town whorehouses were considered safer for the girls,
yeah,
versus working the streets in the cities or even like the flop houses in the cities. Cause
that's where you should Miss Edna got out there.
Mm-hmm.
Cause she didn't exactly work the streets, but she knew a girl who was working the streets in a dangerous city and she got murdered.
Right.
And that does bring us to Miss Edna now. Miss Edna would acquire the chicken ranch from Aunt Jessie, and she had a story of her own before even coming to LaGrange and the chicken ranch. She came into the world on January 3rd, 1928, in Caddo County, Oklahoma. Edna was the eighth of 11 children. They didn't have TV and phones right
then. Too many children. Yeah. That's too many.
I've got two, and that's where I want to stop. I want my two. That's the perfect number. Otherwise, I might, you know, jump off the Bravenel or something.
When you get outnumbered.
Yeah, right now we're doing man-to-man coverage. So, that's where I want to stay. So she was the eighth of 11 children, and when the Depression hit, along with the Dust Bowl, her family inevitably had to move from place to place. Edna would drop out of school in the fourth grade. At age 16, she moved to Pampa, Texas, or is it Pampa? I'm sure somebody's going to correct us, and worked at a soda fountain. In 1943, her $15 a week salary did not go very far. When her brother returned home to Oklahoma after a leave for a tour of duty at the Panama Canal, she went to visit him. An older married sister had also come to visit from California and convinced Edna to find her fortunes there. She said California is a place you ought to be.
Which is something that people still say.
Nah, I have no desire. No offense to anybody from California, but I like where I live. So Edna moves, and before long after moving to California, her sister tries to marry her off to her husband's friend. That's weird to like try to take ownership of somebody's life like that. And
yeah, her sister Edna was only 16 at the time.
Yeah,
which I mean, I feel like even for that time period was pretty young to be married.
And that was below the age of consent.
Yeah,
and that's why she thought she had some breathing room to maneuver out of this. But her sister, Madeline Nettie over here, Nellie, whatever you want to call them, found a way around the issue by writing to their parents and asking for their consent. As Edna had been living on her own for a while, they figured she was old enough and they acquiesced. They agreed. Edna did not care what her parents thought, and it's hard to believe the parents didn't even ask her for her feelings on the matter. She protested and protested, but eventually gave in to her sister, brother-in-law, and brother-in-law, and married her brother-in-law's friend, Hudson. Hudson was a real piece of elephant excrement.
Yep.
Hudson was in the military and lived on base most of the time, leaving Edna to forge for herself. When he was around, he stole from her to go out drinking and have a grand old time, even with other women. It wasn't long before he came back around with a case of the old gonorrhea. Not diarrhea, gonorrhea. Different ia. She used this revelation to secure a divorce. Not long after, she met a man named Benjamin Groves, who she considered her one true love. However, he was a B-29 pilot, and after getting shipped off, she never heard from him again.
Sounds
I don't think he felt the same way.
Yeah. She did say later on in her interview that if she would find out that he were still alive, she would go find him, and she would show him a thing or two she learned.
I gotta say, I don't think I would want to know what she had. I'm gonna be like, you did what now? Did you keep a count? You know, it's like, I mean, we're not like shaming anybody on that or anything. Just that's me personally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid what I might get from that.
True. I mean, they were very medically safe back then.
Well, they had tests, but they didn't have tests as good as we have now.
This is true.
I'm sure they weren't drawing blood every week because I don't know if I had this in the notes or not, but the workers at the ranch, they had to go to town every week to get tested for venereal diseases. Yep. But again, I don't think they were drawing blood to see if there's something, you know, that's latent hiding under the...
Right. Just kind of making sure there's no boils and sores.
Yeah, giving it the old eye test. Which, you know, there's stories from horror houses where the whores would do that to make sure there's, you know, look at the person's gentleman's sausage.
I mean, they say that in this book.
Yeah.
They did it. They actually washed the members prior to interacting with them. And while they were washing, while the women were washing them, they were taking a look to make sure there wasn't anything hiding underneath.
I mean, quid pro quo, could the, you think that John, as you'll call him, has, I mean, you know, the guy who's coming in for the services, do you think he might take a peek down there to make sure there's nothing on her?
I mean, I feel like that's a fair assessment. And if he's paying for it, it's not something they can say no to.
I mean, they're probably going to see it anyway.
Also true. But are they going to see it too late is the question.
I hope not. They're going to spend some time down there. Anyway.
Rated E for everyone.
Rated E for extreme or whatever it's called. Explicit. Well, they just used like the movie rating. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or you could do like PCMA, like podcast MA.
Yeah.
I feel like E, because when I played... Like, you brought it with a video game, so that meant everybody could play it.
Yeah, this is not for everyone.
No. If you let your kid listen to this podcast, you need to rethink your parenting style.
Unless your kid is 42.
Well, I meant, like, they were under, I don't know, the age of, like, 16, I'll say. You know?
Yeah.
Maybe not let them listen to this.
Yeah, and if they do listen... Don't give them access to your Amazon account, because this photo does also have, or this book has explicit photos.
Yeah. So beware of that too. I should have mentioned that. And there's the photos of Miss Edna, and she'll give an upskirt. So you can't help but notice that. I'm like, well, okay. Anyway, when this B-29 pilot leaves, she would later find out she was pregnant. The baby melted her heart when it was born, and she loved this baby boy. But the baby boy would die at 2 months. And I can't even imagine, because, you know, we get a baby, me and Lydia, who is 3 months now. It was almost 3 months. And I can't imagine what that would be like. I don't want to imagine what that would be like. Needless to say, it broke Edna's heart. I would say more than anything else in her life, she knew at that moment she did not want any other children. After working menial jobs, she gave in to an offer for meaningless sex. And this was an exchange for cash. She became a teenage prostitute. She started off hiding this from her family. Pretty soon it's going to be pretty hard to hide.
Right.
She initially found it degrading, but she figured if men were going to mess around, she ought to get something out of it. So, I mean, she kind of has a point there.
Yeah.
So.
And also... They pay a little bit more than the soda shop.
I'm sure you got some... I don't know if you even got tips working back then at soda shops.
Yeah, probably not, I would imagine.
Hey, and by the way, stop with the tips. If you're just... If I'm going to pick up something, don't let 20% be the starting point for a tip.
Oh, I know.
Otherwise, you're not getting a tip. All you did was turn around and hand me the food. The guy in the back's cooking.
Yep. Tipping culture has gotten way out of control.
Yeah, I'm not... I don't do it. You know, if they turn that around, I just flip it back towards them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Here's a tip. Don't start at 20%.
Yeah.
So, I like the tip, too. If I'm at a restaurant and I have a really good server, I'm going to be beyond 20%. I'm not going 30%.
Right. Maybe like a nice 22, 23.
Yeah. And it depends. And if they were bad, and it wasn't because they had a lot of tables or something, like maybe they got some BO or something. You know, they're kicking a little bit. Might go down to 15.
You're going
to
tip people less because they smell bad because they're working hard? They can't help that.
No, they can help it. If we know there's a difference between working hard sweat and then like you haven't taken a wash rag to your rusty rear in like 5 days.
Fair. We do know the difference.
And we both know there are people we know that don't wear deodorant, that don't bathe every day. There is no, in this world, there is no reason for somebody to stink.
That's true.
There, if you don't have a shower or a bathtub. There's creeks everywhere. Just take your bar soap and go in there.
I mean, we live in the South, so I wouldn't necessarily get in a creek here because you might die.
Alligators. Yeah.
Alligators, snakes, all sorts of things live in there.
Oh, you go to the beach. The beach is fine.
Yeah, the beach is good.
Sometimes, it's not far away.
Every once in a while, there's an alligator in there, too, though.
Every once in a while, it's worth the risk. There's always sharks around.
That's true.
I still get in.
See. Anyway.
Yeah, back to the story. So Edna would actually become pregnant again 2 years later, and she made the difficult decision, and this is going to have lifelong consequences for her, to have an abortion. And the abortion left her scarred and would lead to a hysterectomy. So she couldn't have kids anymore even if she wanted to because of that.
Yeah.
It was very botched. She would go on to say it was the worst decision of her life. And I believe that because later in the book, at one point she has children around her and she seemed very happy but yet sad.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe thinking about what could have been.
And even the doctor who performed her hysterectomy said that the doctor who had performed her abortion
messed it up.
Yeah.
And that's why she had to have that hysterectomy. But Miss Edna, obviously, she has a backstory, and she would ply her trade in multiple locales before arriving to the ranch. She even entertained famous men.
Lots.
Such as James Cash Penny of J.C. Penny. Isn't that right? Doing it right, I think. Which I'm not sure if those are around still, even. I don't know if there's any pennies left.
I don't know either. I want to say they didn't fully close.
Bed Bath & Beyond's back. They only own a website. I'm like, okay, Etsy, calm down. Miss Edna made it seem like nothing happened with Penny, and she thought he might have had a rough childhood, so he was trying to help out the needy girls in the brothel she worked at. But he would start off by handing them $100 bills and then keep handing them more money.
Just to have, like, a lovely conversation with them.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think she was trying to protect him, because you're not going to be spending $250 or more in those days just to talk and be helpful when you go. You know what I mean? You would donate to a charity or do something to help get the ladies out of that type of environment, because it seemed like where she was here, it was kind of sketchy.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he wasn't necessarily taking them to the back rooms, but I'm sure that they were sitting in his lap and, you know.
Yeah. I think they did go to the rooms when he would, like, give them this tips, and, like, he would be one-on-one with the girls and stuff.
Maybe.
That's my dog barking. If there's anything outside, she barks. So that's what the noise is you just heard. After a girl was killed at the brothel Miss Edna was occupying in Fort Worth, Miss Edna decided it was time to find a nicer climate in which to work. She heard of the chicken ranch but thought it was too good to be true. But after hearing good things about the ranch from a couple of other madams who did not have any openings in their own boarding houses, Miss Edna headed out to LaGrange and, I would say, to Destiny. So Miss Edna and Aunt Jessie, remember Aunt Jessie owns the ranch at this time, got along pretty well. However, age and health problems would catch up to Aunt Jessie. Edna had saved up a bit of money and bought the ranch in 1961, but there was a problem. After Aunt Jessie started suffering setbacks, she lost her command over the ranch and the workers began running the house. Now, Aunt Jessie, you understand, had a lot of rules.
Mm-hmm.
She also made sure there was no fighting out there. There's no narcotics and things of that nature. But when she kind of starts to lose her mental capability, all that stuff kind of creeps in. So eventually, well, before we get there, we need to talk about this guy. So there was a new sheriff in town at this time. His name is Big Jim Flournoy. I'm just going to call him Big Jim or Sheriff Big Jim. We'll talk about more about him in a second. But Big Jim was all in on overlooking the goings-on out at the chicken ranch as long as it was nice and quiet and no drugs came and information flowed. We're talking about information from petty criminals bragging and stuff of that nature. And then he could go arrest them. But now it was rowdy and people started to complain and old Jimbo shut her down. It was at this time Edna buys the ranch. So there's an issue remaining, and that issue was there are no chicks for the chicken ranch, so to say. All the girls had left once Big Jim ordered to close. Eventually, she was reopened the ranch, first with just herself and one other woman, then slowly adding more. Eventually, she would come to an understanding, much like the previous sheriffs had with Aunt Jessie. She did this with Big Jim. Miss Edna would let her girls have a week off during a certain time of the month. I'll just let y'all read into that. She charged for the room for the only 3 weeks they occupy the room versus Aunt Jessie, who made them rent the entire month, even though they might not be at the ranch. The girls also had to get regular checkups for STDs, which we talked about earlier. She also required that all girls, save one named Penny, be married or have a pimp. Miss Edna did not like pimps, she claims, but she also claimed a pimp or a husband could keep the girls in line if she could not. I mean, that sounds, has people try to make her sound like a good?
Right.
She's like, well, I can just let your husband or your pimp beat you if you don't do what you're supposed to do, basically. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
she was a good person, but she allowed bad things to happen.
I think she tried to give the appearance of being a good person, it seems like, a lot of the time. To me. Yeah. That's my opinion. Miss Edna apparently never used or followed up on this threat, as far as we know, but the threat was there. Miss Edna was not Aunt Jessie, but she did have her own rules, and she wanted them followed. Now, Penny has her own interesting backstory, and it's a sad story. If you want to read about Penny, who was a worker at the Chicken Ranch, definitely buy the book and read that story. It's a very interesting story. Now, there would be girls who would test what they could get away with, but Miss Edna was a firm madam in her rules. However, for those who follow the rules, she could be a good boss, so to say, and even show compassion to the girls. All these girls had a pass, and Miss Edna could commiserate with them. She did not allow the girls to fight, and also didn't take kindly to girls telling her how to run the place, as seen when she lost it on one unfortunate prostitute who had a table thrown her way. Maybe don't make suggestions. Management doesn't care.
I'm also, was that like a side table?
Yeah, I don't know.
Or did she like throw the dining room table at her?
Surely not the dining room table. Maybe it was like a TV tray.
Maybe.
But Miss Edna made sure good food was provided, and the author says she even became a type of mother figure to some of the girls. Yeah, because there's a lot of moms.
Yeah.
Who pimp out their kids, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And she was sure to make sure to say that there were never any children. They were always 18 and above. But, you know, an 18-year-old is still a kid.
I mean, not in the eyes of the law, really.
Not in the eyes of the law, but, like, they're still kids. They're teenagers. They're fresh-faced and don't know anything about the world.
I mean, I have it later in my notes, but there's some creepy things she says about age stuff, too, that we'll get to.
We'll get to that later.
Yeah. So what about those wives of the men who were visiting the ranch, not just from Fayette County, but from all over? You know, the wives who have husbands going out to take part of what's happening out there.
Well, so I like how at one point the government started handing out licenses to these places so that the bordellos and the brothels could stay open. And one of their reasonings was, well, they had to in order to keep the husbands from like either raping someone on the street because their libido was too high or, you know, beating their wives or abusing them. So they were really doing their wives a favor.
I mean, Miss Edna thought that too. She thought the wives shouldn't care. She thought just because a man visits does not mean he's not in love. He does not love his family. What if the wife can't have sex with her husband? She asked. Is it not good that he visits? She saw sex as sex and love as love. She did draw the line at customers, though, falling for her coworkers. Or falling for her workers, rather. And then she would be on the wife's side.
So once they cross the line of love, then it becomes wrong. It
might cost her some money if that happens.
Right.
Lose a girl. Now she cares. So the ranch would have its fair share of visitors. Students from both University of Texas or Texas A&M would visit the ranch. And it is rumored that boosters would take prospective football recruits to the ranch and take their winning football team out to the ranch to celebrate. If we know, because you have rivalry Saturday. So if Texas and Texas A&M are playing and Texas A&M wins the game, they might get a trip out to the ranch.
Right.
So before we go any further, I want to talk about the sheriff at this time, Big Jim. Big Jim wanted to be a cowboy real bad. And he was. He was a cowboy. I mean, he ran cattle, a herd of cattle. He, you know, was a Texas Ranger. So he wanted to be a Texas Ranger. He was. He wanted to be a sheriff. He was. He was a tall, big man, but most people found him to be kind and friendly. Like, even kids in the park, you know, who still remember him, it would remember him coming up when he was just a deputy and talking to him and being friends with him. But he could be tough when he needed. In his early days, he and a partner stopped a bank robbery in the middle of it being committed. And you also had people who just didn't want to mess with Big Jim. If they knew Big Jim was around, that was all they needed to hear, and they would go somewhere else.
Yeah, because not only was he, like, good at his job, but he was also 6'5".
Yeah.
And he wore cowboy boots and a Stetson, so that made him closer to 7 in appearance, 7 feet tall.
Yeah. So. I mean, boots basically give guys heels. We don't talk about that. I'm sure they're comfortable or whatever.
I hope so.
I don't wear them. I'm more of a tennis shoes and, like, hey dudes kind of guy. So other times, those he pursued would give up, too. If he was chasing a bad guy and they found out Big Jim was after him, they just gave up the ghost, so to say. But he was also a devoted husband, and he attended church where his wife taught Sunday school class. And Jenny, we know the sheriff's department and Miss Edna had an understanding, a kind of symbiotic relationship. Symbiotic? The sheriff allowed the chicken ranch to thrive, and they in turn provided information again about crimes. Big Jim's one role above any other, and Miss Edna agreed with him, no narcotics.
Right. I mean, the sheriff's department even would send deputies over to, like, handle the parking and traffic on busy nights.
Yeah.
Like, that's quite a relationship.
And if she had trouble, she had no problem calling the sheriff's office to send a deputy out to, like, take somebody who might be trying to cause a fight or something to jail. So the ranch would call the sheriff for any crimes, rough behavior, and that was the ice machine. And every new girl had to visit Big Jim so he could fingerprint them and check for warrants in order to weed out any bad apples. I mean, they did their research on the girls going out there. The sheriff was not the only one to know about the chicken ranch. The FBI, down to state agencies, knew. Hell, some of them even went out to the ranch. So what was a visit to the ranch like? Well, Gina, are you interested?
Do tell.
So you would go and you would meet a woman by the door, right? And she would look you up and down before letting you inside. And this was a black woman. So like I said earlier, Miss Edna had relationships with other races, but she still had prejudices. So you would go in. The girls maybe would suggest you buy a Coca-Cola, which is overpriced and another source of revenue for Miss Edna, as was the jukebox, because they would ask you to put some money in the jukebox, which is overpriced too. You would maybe talk for a while with the girl before heading back to do the deed, or you would approach the bar, no alcohol, buy a Coke, which was suggested, and look at the girls who would come into the main area, the parlor. Once you pick the girl you like, you made eye contact, and just as before, you head back, and well, your minds can take it from there.
She did have a lovely, like, parlor room, too, though, where I think sometimes the guys would sit and just chat. I mean,
lovely for that time period.
Well, yes.
Because it's going to creep some people out. Kind of looks like your grandma's dining room or living room.
It does, but then there, it's like your grandma's dining room, but also if it were a bus station at the same time.
Oh, yeah, because those plastic seats.
Yeah, the plastic seats and the ashtrays. She had them every two seats, the ashtray cans.
I wonder if she got them from an old bus, or she knew, or she was like, you know, went to like the bus supply company, bus station. Is there a bus station supply company?
I'm sure there is.
She got a couple of those seats, but they needed to match her horrible curtains she had in there.
Yes.
Which I'm either
sure was fashionable at the time. I would hope.
Yeah. I hope so too. You know. I mean, if you're going to a place like this, you want to be up to date and classy.
Right.
You know, so that's what you're looking for when you go there, right? Now, there were some famous people to visit the ranch. Bob Hope himself. Well, Bob Hope, he did not, but members of his crew did. Mm-hmm. Anytime a bigwig in government would stop by the ranch would be cleared out. If a meeting of state bigwigs was in town, they would arrive in unmarked cars to enjoy the vice at the chicken ranch. State legislators and all types of officials would visit the ranch. When Big Jim was president of the Texas Sheriff Association one year, even the majority of those sheriffs visited.
Of course they did.
We all know in local governments and any kind of government, there's no hypocrisy at all.
Yeah. Which I think it's funny because then brothel watching became a popular pastime to see who was going in and out and who's going in and what dishevelment they came out in.
I mean, Which kind of tells you that people were going in there and coming out looking, you know,
like they had done the business.
Like they did the do. You know, remember that do the do commercial? But I mean, they got mirrors. Straighten yourself up.
I think sometimes they probably were just rushing out. You know, they do the do and then they're like, oh man, I'm ashamed. Let me hurry home.
Oh yeah, post clarity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I didn't realize was a thing until like I read about it like a few years ago, you know. And I'm
yeah.
Like, so that you're probably right. You're probably 100% right on there. So there are rumors, I believe, based on the reading to be true, and plus we have a prostitute who admits to this, that and there's even supposedly a picture with a presidential limo parked out front. And which president are we talking about?
Old LBJ.
Lyndon Jumbo Johnson.
Jumbo.
He called his piece Jumbo. We believe he actually visited the ranch. And LBJ, he was a piece of work. A real piece of work. I don't know if you guys ever heard about Vietnam, but he kind of got us into that. I'm sure you have. Pick up a history book if you haven't. So LBJ, he actually ended up with old Penny. Remember we talked about Penny earlier. She has a sad backstory and everything. Mm-hmm. So she was taken to meet with the president off location, but still as a ranch employee, if you will. Independent contractor. Apparently, LBJ had a thing for the dark-haired ladies. Penny was taken to meet the president, and that would not be the first in a line of visits. And hopefully I have this one right. Because we can hear about what old LBJ, if you're interested in presidential history and what the presidents were into, or this certain president. So I have it marked with a star, Jenny. And I need to get to the right page for it to be there. All right. It says, Penny remembered that fateful day when Big Jim dropped by the brothel with news that President Johnson was visiting a ranch nearby. Would you like to meet him, the sheriff asked her? He likes brunettes. He sent a car for me. I went out the back door and got in a car, and the car took me to wherever he was. And that was just the first of many times I did meet up with him. Turns out LBJ really did like brunettes. And like the did's like italicized. Penny never heard if any other women at the chicken ranch ever spent time with the president, but if they had, it's doubtful they were as well prepared as she was. The previous year, Penny had dated a wealthy, prominent professor from the University of Texas, and because of his research contacts with the federal government, he warned her that the FBI would conduct a background check on her. When Big Jim broached the subject, Penny couldn't help but laugh. I said, well, I've already got an FBI file. Sure, they won't have far to check, she said, leaving the sheriff dumbfounded. When they wanted to check me out to go see LBJ, they didn't have a problem because they already had a file set up. They already knew I was a mother with kids and a big family.
Oh my gosh.
Who just happened to have an unusual job.
I love that that's her reasoning. She's like, yeah, let's go. FBI already knows about me.
How many of those kids do you think were her husband's kids? She says he had a big family.
That's a good question. Probably not as many as he thinks.
Yeah. There's no redhead in the family. Why is this guy, you know, that kind of thing?
You know, it's a secret gene that, or a recessive gene, just kind of props up every once in a while.
Yeah, every once in a while when he comes by the ranch.
Right. Literally pops up. I like how LBJ, though, was, so his Secret Service referred to his secretaries as his harem, because mm-hmm. he obviously only hired beautiful young brunettes. And then he had to have a buzzer installed in the Oval Office because his wife walked in on him at one point with one of his harem.
Oh, Lady Bird Johnson.
Yep. And so he had a buzzer installed that his Secret Service would ring whenever he was in there when his wife was coming. And I also wonder if that buzzer is still there.
I'm sure old Billy C had it.
That's what I was thinking.
You know what I mean? I'm back here with Monica and I don't want to have any interruption. Let's go to the anti-office. What was that? Remember he had like the Oval Office and mm-hmm. he had an office beside the Oval Office.
Yep.
That's what people need to realize. Like most of the presidents, very sketchy people.
Yes.
And I don't care what party you're in. Hey, Joe Biden doesn't care about you. Donald Trump doesn't care about you. I'm talking like on a personal level. They don't. Stop thinking they do.
Right.
They care about that buzzer. That's a big thing. They want to make sure that buzzer's working.
I'm gonna refrain.
I kind of feel saying. Like Biden's is for when he's fallen and can't get up.
I was gonna say I don't think his buzzer is for a sexual.
Oh wait,
use.
Trump had a buzzer too. Remember he pushed it and Diet Coke was delivered with like a hamburger.
His Diet Coke and hamburger.
Jeez, man, what is? How is he not the one in worse health? You know what I mean? It just says to show McDonald's is good for you, everybody.
Don't follow that advice.
Really expensive to get now, but.
Because Donald Trump also is very wealthy and has a team of doctors to give
yes,
him a new
you're
heart.
Right. You are right. Yeah, he doesn't have an HMO. So there would be ministers and those running for office sometimes, Jeannie, who would want to shut down the ranch. Because, you know, it was horrible. Like, one pastor got told, a Southern Baptist pastor got told, stop talking about it. Kind of would get threatened a little bit, too. Mm-hmm. And he and his wife had to hightail it out of there.
Yep.
People running for office who wanted to shut it down, they'd get told very quickly, hey, everybody knows about it. There's, you know, a setup we have with them. Don't mess it up. And they would learn it was a bad idea and just drop it. So, in Austin County, Texas, and this is where we're probably going to end it for part one. There was another brothel called the Wagon Wheel. The sheriff of this county was Sheriff Maddox. And like Big Jim in Fayette County, in more ways than one, this sheriff was, Sheriff Maddox was like Big Jim in more ways than one. In that, you know, he kind of wanted to be a cowboy, a rough guy, and he overlooked the ranch there.
Can I interrupt you for just 1 second? Because I really enjoyed the description that... of the Wagon Wheel. So when they first describe the Wagon Wheel, it reads, if the chicken ranch could be likened to an amorous aunt who, despite telling off-color jokes at family gatherings, was fondly accepted as the life of the party, then the Wagon Wheel played the role of the tacky cousin who drank too much, hit on the caterers, and invariably made everyone uncomfortable. That's such a good descriptor.
We all know that older lady that's like that at a party, too.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this is Aunt so-and-so, but she's not really the aunt.
Mm-hmm.
Aunt, however you want to say it. Who's, we're in the South, aunt.
Who's also hitting on the caterers and drinking too much.
And then her, you know, her young nephew's friends are getting hit on, too.
Yeah. And everyone's uncomfortable.
Yeah. So.
So that's the Wagon Wheel.
That is the Wagon Wheel. That is exactly how, and that's a great description for the Wagon Wheel. So there was a district attorney, Oliver Kitzman, whose area included both Austin and Fayette County, where the Wagon Wheel were, and the Chicken Ranch, respectively. And he did inquire about the Wagon Wheel, but when asked about it by reporters or somebody else, he would say, as long as constituents did not complain, and Sheriff Maddox or him didn't bother him. But the drug trade would be the undoing of both whorehouses. The beginning of the downfall would be a prostitute who would work at both the Wagon Wheel and the Chicken Ranch. And that is where we're going to pick up next time.
It's been fun, y'all.
It has been fun. We do have some things we need to take care of, a little bit of housekeeping, you know, before we say goodbye, goodbye. So we want to remind everybody you can get this book at ArcadiaPublishing.com and wherever local books are sold. You can find out what books are coming out every week by visiting our website or by visiting our various social media channels. We are on Facebook, Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter. All right, everybody. So that was the end of part one. Part two, we will pick up the downfall. And we're also going to meet an interesting character named Marvin. Old Marv, who's a reporter. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Bye-bye now.